Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their summer splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in-store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Title IX regulations were created to protect women and girls to provide them equal opportunities in educational spaces. President Biden's recent Title IX regulations are removing these important protections. With us now to explain how these changes will impact women's and girls' sports is Caroline Moore from Parents Defending Education. Caroline, thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Of course. Thanks so much for having me on.
Excellent. So I'm glad you're with us tonight. So with these regulations and changes to Title IX, does this change effectively eliminate the intended purpose of Title IX?
Yes, it really does. It extends the definition of sex to gender identity, which basically means that the protected female spaces, whether it's in academic programming or just in restrooms or locker rooms, that's now up to gender identity. So if you identify as a female, you are more than welcome to use these spaces, which was not the case before. So as you can imagine, it threatens a lot of privacy, you know, safety, fairness, all of the above for females in K through 12 education, as well as higher ed as well.
That's a perfect segue to my next question here. So, you know, does President Joe Biden believe extending the definition of sex in Title IX to include gender identity is quote unquote inclusive, when in reality it excludes biological females as biological females? What do you think, Caroline?
Absolutely. No, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I mean, he does it under this guise of inclusivity, but in reality, it rolls back the intended purpose of Title IX.
Yeah, it's exactly like the opposite, has the opposite effect on what it's there for, right? Exactly.
Yeah, but I think that, I don't know, this administration seems to have, I don't know, hijacked the English language to kind of, you know, make it fit what they want it to. And the average person, I think, listens to it and they're like, well, inclusive, that's good. But wait, what did you do? You know, I think that that seems to be everyone's reaction.
Yeah, apparently the Biden administration doesn't believe there is a difference between biological males and females.
Yes, incredible. And as we all know, there are huge biological differences. And that's why, you know, when we're talking about things like spaces like restrooms and locker rooms, and especially when it comes to sports, you know, that's where fairness and safety really, you know, it can be an issue. Females, especially going through, you know, changes through puberty or in high school as they get older, I mean, these biological differences become more and more prevalent and they need to be separated.
Wow. Caroline, this is John Whitmer. I wanted to jump in and ask you a quick question. Kansas recently has passed, other states I know have passed, state laws that define biological sex as according to the gender that was assigned at birth. I know it was a big issue here because the legislature had to literally override the governor's veto in order to pass the law. So now how does that affect, you know, when you have a state law that will now be in conflict with Title IX, how is that going to impact?
You know, I think what will end up happening is there's going to be a lot of litigation. This rule, it came out, you know, two Fridays ago, and it actually is going to be published early this week, this coming week. And once that happens, I think that we will see a lot of complaints filed, probably by states and also by, you know, tons of groups on the center right, but also any group that cares about free speech, I think, will file lawsuits against the Biden administration, because what they're doing is, you know, an overreach. Title IX was something that was passed by Congress. And so for the executive branch to effectively override something that Congress did is crazy. And also, I mean, like what you said, things that are going on in states, you can't really have state laws that are in conflict with what the president is now saying is the law of the land. It creates a lot of ambiguity.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. And Title IX has been fought for so many years, decades, actually. To destroy it this way is unbelievable to me. This is Jim Howell, Central County Commissioner. I'm speaking with Caroline Moore, who is the from Parents Defending Education. So my next question would be, this seems to have major implications for privacy and safety in K-12 schools. What do you think about that, Caroline?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. When this rule initially came out, a lot of groups like ours actually, I mean, I think there were over 300,000 comments filed with the Federal Register pushing back on this rule and saying it's bad, whether they were parents, community members, organizations. And we filed one. And our biggest concerns were privacy, safety, and fairness. I mean, those are the main issues here. And I think when you talk about privacy, I think on the left, they try to say, oh, well, they're individual bathroom stalls. Well, that's actually, I mean, that's not the case everywhere, first of all. And second of all, every person needs their own private space when they're using the restroom or when they're changing. I mean, these are when people are most vulnerable and in compromising situations. And a lot of people feel uncomfortable with how they look anyway when they're just dealing with all females, mm-hmm. let alone if there are biological males in the room. And, you know, this also will open up not only, you know, restrooms as you're thinking about it, you know, during the day, but it will also open us up for like sporting games and stuff. So if a kid is at, you know, a middle school basketball game and they go to a restroom, I mean, they could easily be in the restroom with, you know, an adult man, which is, you know, really concerning, because I don't know, when I grew up, we were always taught, you know, stranger danger, and you shouldn't be hanging around with, right. you know, adults anyway, but like an adult male in a little bathroom, it's just, I mean, it's against everything, I guess, I was brought up to believe is, you know, true and honest and good about the world.
And if you don't play along, you get in trouble. Because right now, the way these regulations are being pushed out by this administration, it essentially forces us to have speech that ignores biology and forces us to use their preferred pronouns, which I think is puts the onus on us to know what they think they want to be called.
Absolutely. No, I think that that's one of the biggest overreaches with this this rule is the threat to First Amendment rights. It's going to require students to use preferred pronouns of students. And now, I don't know if you guys know this. I just know this because we get complaints from parents all the time that, you know, one day a student is Samuel and then the next day they're Sally. And first of all, logistically for the teachers and for other students, it's very difficult to keep up with what you are every day. But if you have deeply held beliefs, whether they're religious or, you know, just based on, you know, your moral code, you would have to buy into this and they, you know, use these preferred pronouns, even if they defy this person's biological sex. Mm-hmm. And so it's a huge, it's compelling students to use these pronouns, and it's compelling teachers to do so too. They're not going to be able to push back. And so it's a huge threat to free speech.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'm really, really glad that you're helping us understand this and educate us on these topics. And if folks want to connect with you or want more information about your organization, they can find you, I believe, at defendinged.org. Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. We have tons of resources on there for parents. We also have a tip email address that's on the website. Parents can send things in if they have, you know, confusion about policies or especially like with Title IX, what's going on in their district. A lot of these districts are just going to opt in for this, even though it's not necessarily required until August 1st, I think. And so I think there's going to be a lot of ambiguity. So definitely your listeners are more than welcome to reach out to us. And we have a staff that's more than happy to talk to somebody over the phone or, you know, direct them to resources on our page.
Well, Carol, I want to say thank you so much for joining us this evening. I really appreciate your time. We'll check out that website. In the coming weeks, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg, who announced a 34-count indictment against Donald Trump 1 year ago, will try to convince 12 jurors and six alternates that former president falsified documents to hide salacious information from voters and boost his electoral prospects in the 2016 presidential election. With us now to discuss the trial is Hans Spekowski. I think I did it right that fine that time. Senior legal fellow and manager of the Election Law Reform Initiative and the Edwin Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at the Heritage Foundation. Hans, thank you for joining us this evening.
Sure, happy to talk to you.
Well, I'm so sorry, I keep butchering your last name. You're it's hard for me for some reason. I don't know why that is, but you know, Hans, Alvin Bragg is claiming that Trump falsified his business records by concealing supposed violation in federal campaign finance law through a settlement payment. Is he right?
He's totally and completely wrong. Yeah. He's wrong on the law, and he doesn't have any authority as a local prosecutor to be prosecuting a case involving federal law. And I tell you very easily why. A settlement payment, that, you know, what they're claiming is that $130,000 paid to Stormy Daniels because of a potential claim that she could make. He's saying, Alvin Bragg, that should have been listed as a campaign-related expense. It wasn't a campaign-related expense. I know that. Why? Well, I used to serve as a commissioner on the Federal Election Commission. The FEC is the federal agency that actually enforces the federal law governing the raising and spending of money for federal campaigns. And there's no way that this was a campaign-related expense. And folks don't have to take my opinion for this. The FEC, where I used to serve, did not initiate any kind of civil enforcement action against Trump over this. And the U.S. Justice Department, which has criminal enforcement authority of that federal law, also did not initiate any kind of enforcement action. So neither of the two federal agencies who enforce this federal law think that this was a campaign-related expense.
You're exactly leading into my next question. I was just wondering, so how does Alvin Bragg have the authority to do this, to prosecute this? How is he able to do that?
Well, because he – look, this is a case where he believes that he can get a biased Manhattan jury, a place where in the last election, what was it, 95% of the people voted for Joe Biden, that he can get a biased jury to convict Donald Trump, no matter the lack of facts and the lack of the law on his side. And he's helped along by by a clearly biased judge. This judge, Judge Merchant, he shouldn't even be on the case. He should have removed himself from it because it turns out that his daughter is a Democratic political campaign consultant who among her clients is Kamala Harris, who's going to be part of the team opposing Donald Trump. This judge shouldn't even be on the case.
It's kind of a circus, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah. And we're speaking
And by the way, just very quickly, the Biden administration's fingers are all over this because the main prosecutor who's now in court prosecuting this case, he's one of the assistant DAs, guess where he used to work? In the Biden Justice Department. Oh, in fact, he was the acting number three official in the Justice Department, and he took a pay cut to go to the Manhattan DA's office to prosecute this case.
Well, we're speaking with legal expert Hans von Spakovsky. I think I did it right that time, thankfully.
That time, hey, you got it perfectly.
There you go. Well, you know what? Sure appreciate you helping us understand this. It just seems unbelievable to me. You can't make this stuff up. Testimony this week evolved around a so-called catch-and-kill strategy to intercept negative stories about the former president and then kill them. But Hans, isn't that fairly common? And more importantly, is it a legal practice?
It's not illegal. And in fact, it was actually, to me, kind of amusing. David Pecker was the witness, former head of the organization that, you know, owns the National Enquirer. He was the prosecution's leadoff witness. And yet, what did he say? He said he has done this for numerous celebrities, including Rahm Emanuel, right? You know, former mayor of Chicago, Arnold Schwarzenegger, none of whom were running for office, which just goes to show once again that this wasn't unusual. It wasn't a campaign-related expense. And by the way, if Stormy Daniels had had a real claim, he wouldn't have settled for $130,000. That's the nuisance value.
Wow.
Of her claim. That's just to avoid having to go to court to fight it, to avoid the embarrassment of it. But again, this guy who was supposed to be the prosecution's, you know, big witness, I think actually helped Trump.
Well, the former president is in a campaign, and 5 months from now, this election is going to be over. So I'm just curious, what are your thoughts about them forcing him to sit in this courtroom this entire time when he wants to be out there basically moving his agenda forward? Why are they doing him? Why are they forcing him to sit in this courtroom?
Well, because this is all part of the effort to wage what's called lawfare against this president. They want to look. The way to look at this is, what was the case that we got most recently from the Supreme Court? It was the effort to knock him off the ballot in numerous multiple states across the country. Fortunately, the Supreme Court came back 9-0 and said, you can't do that. That's unconstitutional. But the thing is that Democrats and liberals did not want the American people to have the opportunity to vote for him.
Right.
And that's what this case is about. There, it's what the case is about down in Atlanta, Georgia. It's also what the federal case is about.
Well, considering the importance of this case and the importance of this president having very limited time right now, I'm just curious: are defendants always required to be present?
That to me is somewhat unusual. I didn't think that a defendant could be forced to be. To be president and to be present in the courtroom, but this judge is forcing him to do that. Look, this case shouldn't even be taking place in New York City because of the bias of the jury and the jury pool there. And yet again, this judge refused a motion filed by Trump's lawyers for a change of venue. Once again, I think showing how biased this judge is in this case.
I could not agree with you more, and thank you for clarifying that truth. Well, Hans, I want to say just thank you for joining us this evening. I appreciate your legal expertise. It's nice to have someone who understands these things deeply help us to understand that as well. If folks want to connect with you, they can find you online at heritage.org. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Very good. And so, I'm going to see if I can say your name one more time. Hans von Spakovsky. Good job.
Yeah,
I appreciate your time tonight. Yeah.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Last Friday, the governor went on another veto spree, and she did not stop until late Wednesday afternoon. The legislature is back in session this week, starting tomorrow, for their veto session once again. And joining us now to review the current legislative veto session is one of my great friends, House Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter. Blake, thank you for joining us this evening.
Hey, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
Well, I'm so glad to hear from you. You're obviously going to be very, very busy this week. I understand they're going to try to get a lot of things done Monday and Tuesday and hopefully maybe wrap things up. So what do you think is going to happen next couple of days?
Yeah, so our normal legislative session is going to end on Tuesday. So what a lot of folks might not realize is that the Kansas Constitution bounds us to a 90-day session in even-numbered years, and this is an even-numbered year. So our time is up, and so on Tuesday, that is the last day for our final normal session for this year. So we have Monday and Tuesday in order to override these vetoes, finish up the budget and any other legislation that's outstanding, and basically head home and work our normal jobs and basically get ready for an election year.
Let me just tell you, I was extremely happy with the Kansas House for that tax bill you guys put out. Was amazing. It did both income taxes, sales taxes, and property taxes. It was really a nice package. I actually thought the governor was going to at least let that go into law without our signature. I was a little bit shocked when she decided to veto that. But last week, you guys did a great job and basically shoved it back at her with 104 to 15 vote. I was really impressed. That means Democrats on your side of the rotunda have basically sent a message to the governor. This needs to pass. I'm more worried about the Senate. What do you think is going to happen over at the Senate side?
Well, it's going to be close, I think, in the Senate. So there were a few people missing the night that before the legislative veto session break. And so I think they have 26 votes right now. So what I would encourage people to do is contact your state senator and encourage them to vote to give you taxes. I mean, this tax bill it's a big tax bill. It's cutting Social Security taxes completely. It's getting rid of them and allowing people to keep all of their Social Security income instead of the state tax. And actually, Kansas is like one of 12 or 13 states that still tax Social Security. You're right. It does property tax. It eliminates the food sales tax early. It does a lot of great good for the state of Kansas. And initially, when this bill passed, it passed 119-0 before we sent it to the governor. Now, 15 of those Democrats that were a part of the 119 119, hopped off and did not want to override the governor. But we still have a very strong vote. And so now it's going to go over to the Senate. I'm hearing they have 26 votes, but they need one more. So again,
yep, 27.
Contact your state senators. Yep. And encourage them to override the veto so that we can get some people the tax relief that they desperately need, especially in this Biden economy, which just quite frankly sucks. I think everybody knows it. They feel it. And, you know, this fall, make sure that when you're voting, you vote for a different president. That's hopefully going to give us a better outlook.
So if the Senate doesn't actually override the veto, where are we? You know, the governor has said that she's going to call a special session. If that doesn't pass, if they do some type of tax reform this year, what do you think is going to happen if this does not pass the Senate tomorrow?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, we'll have about 24 hours then to figure it out and get something to her desk that hopefully she won't veto. So, unfortunately, what that means is a lot less tax relief for Kansans, I think, because one of the things that she says is our bill is too expensive, which is just shocking to me because the difference between her tax plan and the tax plan that we've passed is $35.7 million.
That's less than half a percent.
That's less than half a percent of our overall state budget.
Yeah, and frankly, the economy, you know, the consensus revenue estimating numbers came in very positive, actually, which she may have been had some concern earlier, but the last report was actually pretty good. So I can't think of a good reason at this point for her to actually veto this, other than the fact that she is not middle of the road. She is extreme, and I'm disappointed that she has put the state in this position, and it comes down to probably one vote in the Senate. And honestly, this election cycle coming up, if this doesn't actually pass, I think this is going to be on almost every postcard in every election cycle, or so every election race coming up is, where was your legislator on this issue of tax cuts?
You are absolutely right, especially because it passed the House chamber unanimously twice.
Right.
Before it went to the governor, and then there's a few people who chose to side with the governor instead of their constituents, 15 Democrats that decided to do that when it came back for the override in the House. And so I'm just hoping that, the Senate, they can get that extra vote. And you're right, I think people will remember it. And if Laura Kelly calls us back for a special session, I think we have a great tax plan right here. And I think we should continue to work towards that effort. And if she calls us back for a special session, well, the thing is we can work on a whole lot more stuff than just taxes if she does that. And you know what? I'm appreciative of the extra time, and there's some other stuff that we weren't able to get accomplished. So I'm looking forward to the other issues that we can work on if she decides to call us back.
So when the Senate brings this up for a vote, if it fails, doesn't get 27 votes, that kills the bill. Is that correct?
Yeah, it does. So we fail to override it, and that bill's dead. Now, the content is still alive, so we can go back to a conference and find a new bill to try to put some of the content back in there and figure out how we want to move forward. But every time this bill fails, I don't know if you've been keeping track of the numbers, but the tax relief goes down each time. And so the problem is if this fails to override, it's going to be less tax relief for Kansans, and that's going to be extremely unfortunate.
There's a couple of folks in the Senate that think that they would say to themselves, or they say to the people, that they're very conservative, but they voted for the less conservative tax bill earlier, and now they're not so seem to be supportive of the House position. I find that to be very strange to me. Are you willing to name a couple of folks we need to put some pressure on to pass this? If you don't want to name them, that's fine. I know who they are, I'm pretty sure. But is there anybody you'd like to name for us to?
I mean, here's the thing. There's senators that aren't running for re-election, and so they don't care. I mean, that's what it amounts to. I mean, they've basically have come out and have said, hey, you know what? I don't care. This isn't the right thing to do. And whatever the governor signs, then okay. But if the governor opposes it, then I mean, these are Republicans we're talking about. But I mean, Senator Rob Olson is a prime example. He seems very frustrated with Senate leadership from what I can tell. I think that there's other personal politics that are at play and not necessarily the constituents at the forefront for Kansans.
Hi, Blake. John, how are you, sir?
Hey, John, I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Fine, thank you. You know, I remember a couple of colleagues, you know, were across the hall from me, a guy named John Dahl and another guy named Dennis Pyle. Those were a couple of senators since, you know, I don't want to put you on the spot to answer Jim's question. If, you know, legislators are, or rather, if my audience is interested in reaching out to any of, you know, the senators that might be on the fence on something like this, well, I would say John Dahl would be somebody to call. I would say Dennis Pyle would be somebody to call. In fact, if you wanted to call Dennis Pyle, his cell phone number is 785-742-3780. Feel free to give Dennis Pyle a phone call.
And actually, one of the people that we do need to give a call to, and they're actually, he's at a great risk of losing his next election, is Senator Jeff Pittman, who is a Democrat that's in a Trump district. And so he's up in the Leavenworth area. So I would highly encourage everybody to encourage him to, you know, or if you know anybody up in Northeast Kansas or Leavenworth, give him a call and have them encourage, you know, the lone Democrat that might actually help get this passed.
I'll just to make this important, I've done the math for myself. This is hundreds and hundreds of dollars for me and my wife this next year. If this passes, just for someone like me, this is hundreds and hundreds of dollars of tax difference for.
But I thought this only affected the rich. This is not a, Laura Kelly loves spinning this, that it's only tax cuts for the wealthy and whatnot. The high tax bracket, Blake, as I recall, it's what, $35,000 a year, something like that?
Well, so if you're a single filer, to be classified as rich in the state of Kansas, if you make more than $30,000, you are rich.
That's the rich that she's talking about.
Yeah, so teachers and anybody else that you can think of that that make over $30,000, you're rich in the state of Kansas.
I think the one of the biggest parts of this this proposal, this law, is deals with the issue of income tax on Social Security benefits. We have got, you know, these folks are really hurting, and we are an outlier across this country. We're an outlier. We need to be able to do what other states have done and exempt Social Security income from income taxes. I think that's one of the most important parts of this.
Well, we've heard often that people talk about our outward migration and how we're losing population. Right. It's not only the youth that are doing it, but it's also the elderly and the people who are over 65 that are getting Social Security. If I'm over that age, well, why would I stay in a state where my money doesn't go as far because it's getting taxed? And I can move to 40-some or 30-some other states, and my money will go further. So when you're on a fixed income like that, that's going to matter, and those decisions are going to be made. And so this is going to help keep people in the state of Kansas and keep retirees here so that they can spend time with their grandkids and continue to live out their golden years here.
Well, Blake, I just want to say thank you for being on the show tonight. If you can hold over to the other side of the break, we would love to continue discussion just for a few more minutes if you can. I know there's other bills we'd like to talk real quickly.
Absolutely.
Talking with Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter, and we have a couple of more bills I think that are interesting. Is there anything that's on that list tomorrow or Tuesday that you'd like to raise? I have a number of bills here, but what do you think is the hottest bill tomorrow or Tuesday?
Well, there's one bill that it's a big piece of legislation, and I think it's something that we desperately need. So it's actually the Help Not Harm Act, and what this bill is, it starts off in the Senate and then it comes to the House after they pass it. But what it is it says that youth are minor children under the age of 18 are basically prevented from getting hormone blockers, transition surgeries, things that are going to permanently impact their bodies. And really what it amounts to is you can do all that stuff when you're 18, when you're an adult. But when you are a minor, that is not something that we believe is in the best interest of minor children's health. So we prohibit things like tanning beds until kids are 18. We prohibit, smoking, alcohol, all these things. And so it's interesting to me is that last year the legislature, unfortunately, I missed the vote because, well, not really unfortunately for me, but my second child was born, so I was not there that day. But the legislature kicked a bill to the governor, and she signed it, which was increasing the smoking age from 18 to 21 because these individuals are not smart enough or old enough to make this mature of a decision about their health. But yet we're going to allow an 11-year-old or a 12-year-old to do permanent surgeries to their bodies. That makes no sense. There's a logical fallacy right there that does not make sense. And so for us, this is something that we should enact. We should protect our minor children. Once they're an adult, hey, if you want to go, you know, have various surgeries and change your body permanently, then that is your determination to do so. But otherwise, we're going to protect you.
It seems like you can't figure out what an adult is. 18 years old is not necessarily an adult for some things, but 11 years old is old enough for other things. It's crazy.
Yep,
hey, I'm just
exactly.
Yeah, I'm curious. I love listening to the legislature on some of the streaming platforms, YouTube especially. Do you know when the House and Senate will take up some of these issues tomorrow or Tuesday?
Yeah, actually. So the House is going to begin our work tomorrow at 9 o'clock, and the Senate is actually going to start tomorrow at 8 a.m. So if you wanted to, you can go to the YouTube and type in Kansas Legislature around those times, and you'll be able to see the live feeds.
Very good. That's awesome. Well, I also want to say thank you for giving us an update today. I sure appreciate that.
Hey, Blake, let me ask you. I've got to ask. You know, she's got – trying to figure out Laura Kelly. Okay, I mean, we could spend hours on that particular topic. But do you have any idea what prompted her to veto the Chinese spot drone bill? I mean, I thought this one was pretty straightforward. When I saw that one, that was a head scratch. I mean, Dan and I talked last week about the police dog bill, which I thought was another stupid one for her to veto. And then she outdid herself and vetoed a bill on Chinese espionage. I don't get that.
Yeah, John, unfortunately, you're right. We could be here for a while trying to discern why decisions were made or not on some of these vetoes. Some make more sense than others for her politically, but this one doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me. It was a phase out of these drones from our law enforcement and our state agencies that are DJI drones. These drones are actually being talked about right now in Washington, D.C. to outright ban them in the U.S. And the Department of Defense, the FCC, they've all weighed in on this particular drone manufacturer and said, don't do it. It's not good. We're prohibiting this for ourselves. So what makes no sense is why we would continue to support and allow for the Chinese Communist Party to basically gain an intel picture on what our emergency responses are. It just does not make any sense. And so I'm looking forward to hopefully overriding this one as well. It does start in the Senate, so they have to go first. If it fails to override there, then we won't get the opportunity to have that vote. But ultimately, this is something I think we should pass as well.
Well, Blake, wanted to say thank you again. I know if people want to connect with you online, they can find you at Carpenter for Kansas. That's forkansas.com. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Or Speaker Pro Tem Blake Carpenter on Facebook.
Well, thank you again for your time this evening. I'm going to go ahead and go to a call. And Ed, you're on with the John Whitmer Show.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I haven't heard anybody say anything about this, but I got to thinking about, well, just the last two world wars, how much oil, fuel, and all that crap was dumped in the ocean. There shouldn't be any life in the ocean, according to the environmentalist idiots. And then all the shells that were fired in the air, I don't remember anybody cleaning that oil up or cleaning the environment up. You know, the world will clean itself up. The air will clean itself up. And, the water, the ocean must have cleaned itself up. And they have a little oil spill now. They go nuts. But you realize how much oil was dumped in the ocean, the ships.
Well, I don't really know the answer to that question, but it's an interesting perspective. Yeah,
they sunk so many ships, and no one. Didn't ever anybody clean it up. Now they get an oil spill that's not near that, and they go crazy, and things clean itself up.
Well, Ed, thank you for the call. I sure appreciate that.
Yeah, wish our side would get in their faces and start saying how nuts they are.
You know, it's funny, Jim, Ed brings up a good point. When you hear all of this talk about, like, you know, Marcy was talking
right
about Biden's plans, and they, it is interesting how it's a crisis, and I think that's what they play on. And I think that's kind of Ed's point is, you know, all of the what was it Al Gore said, and the squad has said it before that the polar ice caps are melting, and it's doom and gloom. The sky is falling. The worlds are going to end. And it just never seems to happen. So they constantly have to push off the date or change the term. I mean, first it was global warming, and then it was, you know, it's changed. Now it's climate change because
it's amazing to me that, you know what, everything seems to work out just fine. There are cycles around the world. It's just fine. Temperatures go up, temperatures go down. We're part of nature. You know what? Sure appreciate John. Thanks for having me on this evening. I really enjoyed the show tonight.
Pleasure. You did great. You did a very good job, my friend. I appreciate you, and we'll have you on again.
I hope so. That'd be great. In the meantime, have a great week and carry on, fellow deplorables.
Dive into the start of summer at Whole Foods Market. Check out their Summer Splash event with sales on fresh organic produce, organic strawberries, and a fan favorite sale on Ben & Jerry's and Talenti. Explore deals on grill-friendly meats like organic air-chilled chicken breast, beef and chicken kebabs, all with no antibiotics ever from our meat department. Plus, grab easy sides from prepared foods and cool off with refreshing drinks. Kick off your summer and shop in store or online at Whole Foods Market today.
All-star closer Kenley Jansen, we have a question.
What's the best podcast of all time?
Baseball isn't boring, baby.
I'm Rob Bradford, and every single day I'm sitting down with the biggest names to show you this great game is the greatest game. It's my podcast. It's my passion. It's a cause I started more than 2 years ago and is now the most prolific national daily baseball pod there is. Another fact, so jump aboard the BIB Express. Follow and listen to Baseball Isn't Boring, presented by Wasabi Hot Cloud Storage on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.